Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. And today's episode is with Duncan, episode 9. Duncan talks about how in sobriety he has connected more into things like meditation, how he's more present in life and how he feels like he's gained control in particular of his thoughts and his mind, how he feels at peace and how he's comfortable now in his own skin. I hope you enjoy it. So let's start to talk then about your three things that you've noticed, three areas of your life that you've noticed have improved in sobriety. What's your first one?
Oh, does it? That's, you've got that voice of Desert Island Discs. Oh, yeah.
I've practiced.
My first disc. So I found this list tricky because there's a long list of things I could choose from, and I'm not even sure I got the question right, but I picked three things that I notice as different and that I really am pleased about. And the first one is an unlikely one: meditation. I'm going to pick meditation. It's something that's in my life now quite a lot, and I'm looking to build on it. I've been staggered by what it's brought to my life. I had pigeonholed meditation as some stupid, ridiculous old hippie bollocks thing that only fools did when they were off their head on drugs. What I didn't realize was that meditation was not that at all. It's got a huge scientific basis for it, and it's a brilliant tool for managing my mind, managing my thoughts, which need managing, need bridling. I think that a lot of my problems in life, not just sobriety, Louisa, but a lot of my problems in life is that my thoughts have managed me, and my thoughts, well-meaning as they are all super defensive and all about survival, and they like to think about every potential eventuality and then try and troubleshoot it. And my thoughts think the best way of keeping me safe is to imagine every terrible thing that could possibly happen, which really just frightens the fuck out of me. And I collapse under the pressure and weight of all these fears and whatnot. So my thoughts have run amok in my head for far too long. And meditation is a brilliant technical little device that I can use to bridle my thoughts and manage my thoughts. I manage my thoughts. And therein lies such fruit, such joy, such peace, such ability to make better decisions, to be happier in my own skin. Everything gets augmented if I manage my thoughts. And meditation, I've found, is a route in to doing that. So I would so definitely have it as one of my list of three. So I have. There it is. Meditation.
I would say I was very similar to you in my younger years, in that I looked at meditation and I thought, oh, roll my eyes, and really didn't want to know. And like you say, it's got a lot of scientific background. And so when I trained in what I do, with even with the cognitive behavioral therapy side of things, but certainly the hypnosis, there was a large part of it was about learning how to observe your thoughts and not get absorbed by them. And I thought to myself, God, they should teach this at schools.
They should.
So how do you meditate? What's your meditation like?
I started with various apps. So I really like Sam Harris's Waking Up app. And he's got an introductory course, which I still haven't finished. So guided meditations. His are focusing on breathing to begin with, you know, because breathing draws you into a present, which is my second thing on the list. So let's not get me going there too soon. Breathing centers me. This understanding that I have consciousness, and that things that might distract me are just appearing in consciousness. I've got a book at the moment that I'm doing an 8-week mindfulness course. So I'm just following what the book says. It's got some online guided meditations, which again, focus on breathing, or they focus on blessing myself or blessing others, or it can be sound focus. It's about focusing, choosing where to focus my attention. So I don't think it really matters where I focus my attention, so long as I learn to focus my attention, because this is the key. It's about being able to wield my own thoughts in the direction that I'm choosing to wield them in, and not have them drag me to a place where I don't want to be. Like, for instance, have a drink. You need a drink. You're better off with a drink. No thoughts. That's not where we're going. What we're going to do today is cooking.
Yeah, that association, isn't it, with cooking?
Yes. Meditation is akin to mindfulness, that buzzword that I rejected myself a few years ago when everybody was talking about it, because I just rejected it because everybody was talking about it. But in actual fact, honestly, it's such a good thing, mindfulness. And there's the clue in the title, being mindful, in charge of my own mind. It's a practice. It's like anything. It's like riding a bicycle. It's like any skill. The more you do it, the more you can do it, the better you are at it. And so it's a practice. So I try to make sure I do it at least twice a day. I don't manage it, actually, but I try for twice a day. I definitely manage it once a day. I probably manage 50 minutes a day, which I think is huge.
That's massive.
Yeah. But
what an achievement.
The thing this book points out, which is so true, is you say to yourself, oh, I haven't got 50 minutes in my day, but you do, because there's another economy or an exchange rate that comes into play. By spending that much time calming myself, centering myself, ordering my own thoughts, I do everything else so much more efficiently. I gain time. So it's a good investment. When I was making notes for you, I had to think those three things. I wrote three things down next to meditation. I wrote down truth revealed. I think that comes. I wrote down touching the void. And I really think there's something in that. When I meditate, I feel I'm touching the void. There is something greater than me. There's certainly something greater than my thoughts, but there's something greater and bigger than me that I seem to get my fingertips to in meditation too. And I call that touching the void. Void is well misnamed, because I think it's full.
Yeah.
But anyway, the other thing that I quite like, which is, I don't know if it's naughty, but it is what it is. It's an appropriate high. I get high off meditation. I find myself buzzing and fizzing inside in a way that I quite like.
Mm.
And I realized that I no longer like substance highs. I got a hit of some brandy by mistake at Christmas last year. I really detested the feeling, which was interesting. I really hated the feeling. I now know I don't like that feeling. But in meditation, I get that buzzy little fizzy thing. And I think to myself, oh, this is interesting. This is probably everything I looked for previously when I wanted to get off my head, but without any of the detritus attached.
Yeah, just to explain for anybody listening, that you say that accidental hit of brandy, that was from a Christmas pudding, wasn't it?
It was. I was deep in conversation. Somebody put a bowl of pudding in front of me and they'd set fire to the brandy, but it hadn't really worked. And I put a mouthful in my mouth and I was chewing and I'm still sort of in this conversation. And suddenly my body just went into warning, you know, drugs on board. It was like, what the hell is going on? And I was quite alarmed. And I realized I felt it buzz from my toes all the way through my head, my ears, my eyes, everything. I just felt it. And I hadn't had anything like that for so long that it was a shock. And I realized I didn't like it. I don't want that.
But meditation is giving you that.
Meditation, it's a different high. It's a little gentle fizzing around the peripheral of my being. It's sort of a gentle, comforting little sort of thing within myself. And I can feel it and it's pleasant. But I'm not being hijacked by it.
Gosh, that's a really good way of putting it. Hijacked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading a bit of Eckhart this morning. I was trying to prop the computer up here. I picked up Eckhart to do it. And I thought, actually, I'm not going to use that as a prop. I'm going to read a little bit of it with my morning coffee. And one of the things that he was talking about was when you lose touch with inner stillness, you lose touch with yourself. And I thought, it's no coincidence I'm reading that just before talking to Duncan. And when you lose touch with yourself, of course, you lose touch with the world.
So when I was drinking, my focus of attention was always about getting the next drink. That's where I'd got to. I would indulge in life, but only to the ends of either getting my next drink or being perceived as not getting my next drink. Just, you know, if I was working hard on my client's stuff, it would be to justify a drink. If I was cooking, it would be, I can have a drink. If I was going on a walk, it would be to a pub. If I was going up a mountain, it would be, how great will that drink be when I come back off the mountain? That's where my, oh, and then of course you remember, oh, gosh, this is such horrible memories, but it's always about auditing. Have I got enough drink? No, I haven't. I probably don't. I need to pick up some. Where can I pick up? Where can I hide it so that it won't look like I've got so much drink? Where can I hide it so that somebody else won't drink my drink? It's just, that's where my thoughts were before. So I've stumbled into thinking about this other stuff because I stumbled into it because I was looking for a way out of the alcohol trap. And through finding dynamics that helped me step away from alcohol, I stumbled across these truths. In fact, truth revealed, like I said in meditation, you know, the world is so much more wonderful, so much more intricate, so much more fabulous than I realized. And when you see it, you know, it's a breadcrumb trail that is, you can't help but follow.
Yeah. That inner knowing, that inner awareness that you have has led you, really. Alcohol was, in fact, isn't it that alcohol's derived from the Arabic word al-kul?
Is it?
Which it means body-eating spirit.
No way.
Yeah. And there are there's all sorts of different cultures that think about alcohol differently, but it's sort of, there are beliefs that it opens up your body to be invaded by demons in some cultures. I find it so fascinating that your spirit, your awareness, your inner soul, I think we need to nurture and listen to. And for years I was drinking. I didn't want to listen to my thoughts. I certainly didn't want to listen to my soul. I didn't want to know. My goddaughter actually has just messaged me overnight, and I did ask permission to share this because I knew what you were going to talk about with the present moment.
Okay.
And she's currently in Bali. And she said she had a couple of drinks in the first week in Bali. She's actually there for 6 weeks, lucky sod. But since then, she hasn't touched alcohol at all. Now, she's not a big drinker at all. She's very health conscious. But what she's noticed is that she hasn't missed it. And they went on a boat trip the other day, and there were people there doing shots on the boat at 11 in the morning. And she just thought, no, it's beautiful. I want to be in this moment, the view, the sea, the sun, you know, it's just stunning. And with her friends.
That's madness, isn't it? You're there in that setting and some part of your brain says, oh, do you know, it'd be much better to pour this liquid down your throat that you don't even really like the taste of.
Yeah.
Really. Than enjoy the dolphins, that beautiful blue water, the waves, the sea, the sun, you know, it's so mad.
It's some cracking marketing, isn't it? When you think about it, you know, how have we fallen for it for so long?
How have we fallen? Well, that's a whole podcast in itself.
I think it is, actually. I might have to get you back on.
But high five to your goddaughter. Well done, her.
Yeah, she's amazing. She really is amazing. And she actually said, which made me feel really good, she said, I was thinking of you and your journey. Yeah. Because she's been following the Sober account. And so even those moderate drinkers, we are touching. So yeah. We're doing a good thing, spreading the word.
In my household now, there are no drinkers left. So Karina stopped. My middle son never really drank. I've got my almost son, Nico. He stopped drinking almost a year ago, actually over a year ago. Grace stopped about a month ago. So, you know, it's mushrooming out. People see there's a new message in town.
And
the evidence is clear for everyone to see.
If you'd like to listen to the whole episode, then head back to the 28th of November 23 on your podcast timeline with Duncan. And just to remind you, if you head to my website, louisaevans.com, you will find the Sober Resilience course, where you can use code RESILIENCE544 to get a massive 30% off. You'll also find a range of hypnosis recordings on so many subjects, from confidence boosting through to enjoying exercise or finding weight loss easy, alongside ones to support your sobriety. If you use the code SOBERREBEL, all one word, you'll be able to buy one, get one free on all of those recordings. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests over this last couple of years for their openness and honesty. And the podcast will be back in its regular fortnightly slot very shortly. Have a great day.